Lord Sri Krishna expertly arranged the great Kurukshetra battle between the Kurus and the Pandavas, and thus removed to a great extent the earth's burden. But the Supreme Lord, whose influence is inconceivable, was not yet satisfied. Because of the continued presence of the undefeatable Yadu family, the Lord desired to bring about the destruction of the Yadu dynasty so that he could completely wind up his pastimes on the earth and go back to his own abode. Using the pretense of a curse by an assembly of Brahmins, he withdrew his entire dynasty from the surface of the earth. By Sri Krishna's desire, many great sages headed by Narada, Vishvamitra, etc., assembled at the holy place named Pindaraka, near the city of Dwaraka. The young boys of the Yadu family, absorbed in a playful mood, also arrived there. These boys dressed Samba in the guise of a pregnant woman about to give birth and inquired from the sages about the fruitfulness of Samba's so-called pregnancy. The sages cursed the mocking boys by saying, "She will give birth to a club that will destroy your family." The Yadus, frightened by this curse, immediately lifted the garment from Samba's abdomen and found a club. Hurrying to the assembly of Ugrasena, the king of the Yadus, they offered a report of everything that had taken place. Fearing the Brahmin's curse, Yaduraj Ugrasena ordered the club ground to powder and thrown into the ocean. Within the ocean, a fish swallowed the last remaining lump of iron, and the waves carried all the bits of ground powder to the shore, where they were implanted and eventually grew into a grove of canes. Fishermen caught the fish, and a hunter named Jura used the iron lump found in its belly to fashion an arrow. Although the Supersoul, Lord Krishna, understood what was happening, and yet he did not wish to do anything to counteract it. Rather, in the form of time, he sanctioned these events. So that's the opening scene of the 11th canto. Now to get to your specific request, because you have to know that, because that's the opening scene. Okay, here we go. The Supreme Lord Krishna replied to Uddhava's prayerful entreaty that he be allowed to return with him to his abode. Krishna advised Uddhava to take to the renounced order of sannyas, and then Uddhava showed interest in more elaborate instructions. The Lord further described the Avadhuta's account of his 28 spiritual masters. So let me tell you, when does Uddhava approach Krishna?
Question. So Uddhava stayed here? He didn't go?
Right. He stayed. Because remember, in the third canto, Vidura is traveling and he meets Uddhava.
Yes.
And he hears everything. And he wants to learn more from Uddhava, but Uddhava says, "No, nearby is Maitreya, and he's senior to me, so you go and hear from Maitreya." It's the opening of the third canto.
I was thinking the whole Yadu dynasty was gone.
Yes, well, Uddhava's, there's always exceptions. There's always, you know, most everybody, but there's always a few exceptions. So, you heard how the Yadu dynasty has been cursed, okay? Right after this incident, Lord Brahma and the demigods come to Dwaraka. And Lord Brahma situates himself in the sky and says to Krishna, It has been 125 autumns. And you came on our request, because that was the opening scene of Canto 10. Mother Earth was crying, right? Mm-hmm. She went to see Lord Brahma. They went to the shore of the ocean of milk. We heard that earlier today. So that was why Krishna came. So Brahma is saying, you did what we asked you to do. All the demons are gone. This is after the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna has killed all the demons. So Brahma says, if you like, now you can return to your abode. It's been 125 years. You've done everything that we needed you to do. You can go back. Uddhava can figure out, Krishna is about to leave. So Uddhava says to Krishna, I can't bear the thought of living without you. So let's hear now. After hearing Uddhava's prayerful request to be taken back with him to the spiritual world, Lord Krishna informed him that he was indeed desirous of returning to his own personal abode, because the purpose of his descent had been successfully fulfilled, and the misfortunes of Kali Yuga would soon beset the earth. When did Kali Yuga begin?
After Maharaj.
According to the Bhagavatam, the day Krishna left the planet, that's the beginning of Kali Yuga. I know you were going to say something to do with Maharaj Pariksha.
Yeah, I didn't let them enter, something like that.
But according to Bhagavatam, and more than once, not in a purport, it directly says, the day Krishna left the planet, that's the official date of Kali Yuga. He thus advised Uddhava to take up sannyas by fixing his mind upon him and establishing the theoretical and realized transcendental knowledge. The Lord further instructed Uddhava that while remaining untouched by contamination and being compassionately disposed to all living beings, he should begin wandering throughout this temporary world, which is simply the combined manifestation of the Lord's illusory energy and the imagination of the living entities. Fits right in to what we were saying. The imagination of the living entities. And that's our recurrent theme in this 11th canto. Throughout this whole Uddhava Gita, there's a recurring theme that material existence is a dream. It you see in so many, time after time. Yes, Prabhu?
I know this is not an appropriate
question, but in the chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, the divine and divine nature, Krishna says that the demon and soul are the world. This is very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I love this.
Okay.
Their version of the dream, there's no conception of God. Our explanation of the dream is in full awareness of the existence of God. And Prabhupada even writes in the purport that although they say everything's a dream, they're very expert at enjoying the dream. So they think the dream that has no existence or anything in relationship to God. We know the dream is under the control of God. So it's a big difference. It's a much big difference. And we don't try to enjoy the dream. We're trying to wake up from the dream. They're not trying to wake up from the dream. You understand? Yes, We are less under the control of the modes of nature than they are. They're fully under the control of material nature. More and more. Because that's what they want. They don't want to get out of the dream. They love the dream. They love Las Vegas. They love all this illusory things. There's a nice description in the third canto when Lord Brahma is creating. So Lord Brahma, from his buttocks, creates the demons. From his buttocks. And then there's a description of the evening twilight. Lord Brahma creates the evening twilight. And it takes the form of a very beautiful woman. And the demons are fascinated by this beautiful form of the woman, twilight. Right? In the same way, Mohini Murti. You know the pastime of Mohini Murti? When Krishna, the demons had stolen the jug of the nectar of the elixir of immortality. The demigods and demons had churned the ocean of milk to get the jug of nectar. But as soon as it was delivered by Dhanvantari, the demon snatched it. It was meant to be shared, but the demon snatched it. And then they began fighting who was going to drink it first. So the Lord assumed the form of a beautiful, most beautiful, voluptuous woman, Mohini. And as soon as she came on the scene, all the demons who were fighting who should drink the nectar first became totally bewildered. And they said, "She'll decide." And she said, "Okay, I'll decide, but no argument. Whatever I say." They said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." Because secretly they were all thinking, "I'm going to enjoy her." So this is in the eighth canto, the story of Mohini Murti. And then after that, Lord Shiva is with his wife and approaches the Lord and said, "You know, I heard about this incarnation of yours, Mohini Murti. I want to see it." He's in front of his wife. And the Lord says, "Okay, but don't blame me. What happens?" So the Lord disappears. And there's a beautiful, nice wind. And Lord Shiva's looking around, nothing happens. And he sees a beautiful woman playing with a ball. And his wife is right there. She's playing with the ball, and all of a sudden, the wind takes away her dress. And she's completely exposed. And Lord Shiva becomes mad and starts to chase her. But he cannot really capture her. Even he tries to capture her, she swirls around and she escapes. And she leads Lord Shiva all throughout the universe. And everyone is seeing Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is physically... Okay, I don't want to have to say what I want to say. He's physically... Everyone can see. Yow! He's chasing after this woman as if he's totally sexually aroused. How's that? And Mohini Murti is taking him all over the universe. And everyone is like, "Oh my God." And after some time, Lord Shiva gives it. Okay? Mm-hmm. And that becomes, that discharge turns into gold and silver. And he comes to his senses. And then he returns back to his wife. And then Lord Vishnu returns. And Lord Shiva is happy. He's happy because nobody else could bewilder him. Only the Lord is powerful enough to bewilder him. Cupid tried to bewilder Lord. He burnt Cupid to ashes. Parvati cannot bewilder him. Only Lord Vishnu. So after the incident, Lord Shiva was not... He was like, I have been conquered by my Lord. So, the lesson is, the beautiful form of woman. Prabhupada used to say, man is like butter, woman is fire. When man comes, when butter comes in contact with fire, he melts. So you have to respect the powerful form of woman, because they are stronger in that sense. Shall we go back to Uddhava?
Yes.
We got into a tangent there. Sorry about that. Uddhava then stated that renouncing material things in the spirit of detachment is the source of highest auspiciousness. But such renunciation is certainly extremely difficult to accomplish for living entities other than the devotees of the Supreme Lord, because they are very attached to sense gratification. Uddhava expressed the need for some instruction by which foolish persons who misidentify the body as the self can be convinced to carry out their duties in accordance with the order of the Supreme Lord. Even great demigods like Brahma are not completely surrendered to the Lord. But Uddhava declared that he himself had taken shelter of the only true instructor of the Absolute Truth, Lord Narayan, the all-perfect, all-knowing master of Vaikuntha, and the only real friend of all living entities. Hearing this, Krishna replied that actually the jiva soul can be his own guru. Within this human body, the living beings can search out the Supreme Lord by positive and negative means and ultimately achieve him. For this reason, the human form of life is most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna began to describe an ancient conversation between a Brahmana Avadhuta and the great King Yadu. So let's take a look. So this is the beginning of the Uddhava Gita. Uddhava knows that Krishna is about to leave. Uddhava cannot bear the thought of separation from Krishna, but Krishna says, no, I need you to stay on the planet, and I'm going to entrust you with this confidential knowledge. So here's all the different things. So it begins in chapter 7, and it ends with chapter number 29. So this is a huge section. So what is learned in this section? Well, first there's the 24 gurus. Things in the material world that you can learn different things in your self-realization.
Is it about Dattatreya?
Yes, it's actually Dattatreya, that's right. So, the next item is detachment from all that is material. Then, the nature of fruitive activity. Then, the symptoms of the conditioned and liberated living entities. Then, what is beyond renunciation and knowledge. Then, the narration of the Hamsa avatar, Krishna, comes in the form of a swan and gives transcendental knowledge to the four Kumaras and Brahma. So that's the Hamsa avatar. Then Krishna explains the yoga system. Like Krishna explains the yoga system in the Bhagavad Gita, so he again explains the yoga system a little more elaborately to Uddhava. Then there's a description of the 18 mystic yoga perfections. And then there's a description of the Lord's opulence. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10 is called Vibhuti Yoga. So there's another chapter where it's a little different description. It's similar to Bhagavad Gita, but there are some differences. Then Krishna explains to Uddhava Varnashram. You know what is Varnashram? Okay. Yes. Then he explains the perfection of spiritual knowledge. Then he, and this next one is one of the most important chapters. Pure devotional service surpasses knowledge and detachment. That's a big chapter, chapter 20. Then Krishna explains the Vedic path. That chapter is, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that men of small intelligence are attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas and they want to go to the heavenly planets. Well, in this chapter, Krishna explains what happens to those persons. And there's this nice description that when you go to the heavenly planets, you have your own airplane. And you're flying around and you have beautiful women with you who chant your name. Mahu. Mahu. Can you imagine? Beautiful, right? And you're drinking intoxicating beverages and you're flying all over the universe. And it says that when you're a demigod, you always feel jubilant. Like when people get high, right? When people drink or they take drug. They feel euphoria, right?
You want to go? He wants to go there.
Wait. So, in human form, we don't feel jubilant. Rarely do we. But when you're a demigod, you always feel jubilant. So, Krishna says, you're flying all over this in your own airplane. Surrounded by these beautiful women who chant your glories. And then, all of a sudden, you crash. And you fall head first back to earth.
That's the problem.
Ah, the vacation's over. It's like your family now is on vacation, but at one point, hey, come back home now. That's the fault. That's what Krishna says. That's the fault of going to the heavenly planets. It's going to be up. You have to do so many austerities to go there. But that's why he said limited and temporary. Okay? So that's one chapter. He talks about that. Then he goes into a discussion of how the material creation is sometimes described as 24 elements, 9 elements, 16 elements. He gives different ways philosophers analyze the world. Then there's the story of the Avanti Brahmana. The Avanti Brahmana was a wealthy Brahmin, but he was a Scrooge. He was a miser. And he wouldn't share any of his wealth with his own family. And he was such a miser, he wouldn't even spend his wealth on himself. He just liked to count his money and know that I have so much money. So, when his karma came, he lost everything. And when he lost everything, his family members kicked him out. Well, he didn't do anything nice for them. So when he lost everything, they said, good, get out. So he took sannyas. He took it again. But when he took sannyas, people would taunt him. He tried to eat his food and people would urinate on it. He tried to chant mantras and they would disturb him. So even though he took sannyas, he was getting the karma for all the mean things he had done when he was a householder. But the lesson of the Avanti Brahmin was, he knew that all this is happening because it's my past karma. And so he just tolerated it. And in this way, he was successful. And there's a famous verse in the song of the Avanti Brahmana where he says, I will cross over the ocean of material existence by taking shelter of Mukunda. And that verse is what the ISKCON sannyasis chant as the eighth Gayatri. When you get Brahman initiation in ISKCON, you get seven Gayatri mantras. And when you take sannyas, you get an eighth one. It's the verse from this Avanti Brahmana, that I will cross over material existence by taking shelter of Mukunda. It was a verse also quoted by Lord Chaitanya, which is probably why ISKCON has adopted. Yes, Prabhu? Well, when you surrender to Krishna, the Brahma Sanhita says that your karmic activities are shrunk. Here's how it's explained. By my karma, I should have got my head chopped off. Instead, when I'm shaving, I get a nick. All right? You should have, by your karma, gotten your leg chopped off. Instead, during kirtan, somebody will stomp on your foot. So you get your karma, but it's like a love tap. Prabhupada gives the example. Sometimes a very wealthy millionaire has to go to court and he's fined by the judge. But the judge says, okay, you just pay $1. For a millionaire, it's like, sure, whatever. So for a devotee, everything is greatly, greatly reduced, your karma, when you surrender to Krishna. Okay? Good deal, right? Yes. All right. And furthermore, in Uddhava Gita, then there's the philosophy of Sankhya. Sankhya means analyzing the material world and determining what's eternal, what is temporary, what is material, what is spiritual. That's Sankhya. You're analyzing everything. Then there is the chapter about the three modes of material nature. What's the matter? The three modes of material nature and beyond the three modes of material nature. Then there's the story of Pururava. The story of Pururava took place in Canto 9. Pururava was an earthly king who was in love with this heavenly damsel, Urvashi. But in the ninth canto, Pururava and his love affair with Urvashi was very frustrating. So there's a chapter about what Pururava learned when he was lamenting the loss of Urvashi. And then the next chapter is the deity worship, a whole chapter about deity worship. Then the last two chapters of the Uddhava Gita, Jnana Yoga. You know what is Jnana Yoga? Jnana Yoga means linking with Krishna through knowledge. Okay? And then the final chapter, Bhakti Yoga. So that's the Uddhava Gita. Krishna Kumar, when do you want to do RT? All right, very good. Yes, Prabhu.